Hey, it's Jeffrey Craner, and I want to tell you, Welcome to Night Vale is on the road this winter and spring of 2024, and it's our newest live show called The Attic. So Cecil discovers slides from an old family road trip, which at first seems fun and joyful, but begin to change into something strange and dangerous. This show tells a tale of childhood memories warping through the lens of a cursed slide projection, a shape-shifting creepy doll, and of course, the totally normal dispatches from Night Vale's community radio station. The show stars Cecil Baldwin, Symphony Sanders, me, and Disparition with original music performed live. We'll also have a musical guest with us for all shows because what is Night Vale without its weather? We'll be in Europe in early March, Antwerp on the 2nd, Utrecht on March 3rd, Cologne on the 4th, Frankfurt and Berlin on the 6th and 7th of March, then London, Glasgow, and Bristol March 9th, 10th, and 11th, March 13th in Leeds, the 14th we're in Manchester, and finishing up on March 16th in Dublin. But if you're in the US or Canada, come see our final shows of The Attic in April. We'll be in Toronto on April 1st, then St. Louis on the 3rd, Louisville on April 4th, Columbus April 5th, Pittsburgh April 6th, and April 7th, we're in Jersey City, and we'll close out that tour on April 8th in Northampton, Mass. If you've not seen our live shows before, they're super fun. They're entirely original stories never heard before on the podcast, and you don't need to be caught up on Night Vale at all. You don't even need to know what Night Vale is, so, I mean, you could bring your weird friend who doesn't listen to podcasts. They'll still have so much fun. Get dates, locations, and tickets for all of our remaining live shows of The Attic at welcometonightvale.com. Click on live shows. Go there now. While you're listening, you can multitask. Welcometonightvale.com. Click on live shows.
Success is not final. Failure is not fatal. It is the courage to stand by in silent, frozen horror that counts. Welcome to Night Vale. Good news! There are no more vacancies in the town cemetery. Every single grave, crypt, and vault at Rattlesnake Rest is filled. And you know what that means. No one else can die! Yay! I mean, well, okay. Death is still physically possible, of course, but municipally frowned upon. So be a good citizen and hang in there. Annette Jacoby, director of Night Vale's Prince of Sorrow Funeral Home, is already preparing for a potentially long period of unemployment by taking a creative writing class at the community college. "I've always wanted to be a novelist," Jacoby remarked. She then added with a toothy grin, "I have lots of experience with plots." A long silence followed as her smile faded slowly. "We wish you all the best, Annette." Likewise, Al Kincaid, the gravedigger, plans to spend more time with his daughter, Sophia, now that his evenings won't be occupied by ceaselessly making holes for decorated corpses. He timidly suggested a family game night, to which his daughter rolled her eyes in annoyance, even though she was secretly pleased. With the news that Rattlesnake Rest has been completely filled, I thought we should have a retrospective of our favorite graves. Like all cemeteries, this one is located at the end of a winding dirt road. And like all cemeteries, the grounds are tangled with dense vegetation in the middle of a desolate howling plateau. It is a normal cemetery, with a chill in the air even on the hottest summer day, and an impenetrable darkness even on the brightest full mooned night. And nearly everyone buried here died somewhere else. Nearly everyone. The most important grave in the cemetery lies at the southwest corner. It is the grave around which all the other graves were built. Instead of a formal headstone, it is marked by a gaping hole in the earth and a broken wooden sign that reads, "Rattlesnake Mineshaft." 17 miners are buried here, all of them headless. To understand the history of this important grave, we go to the year 1851. The new player piano in the Earl Street Saloon was on its 10th repetition of Buttons and Bows. The first few times, the rowdy patrons sang along, but now, no one could get it to stop, and the song was putting everyone on edge. It seemed to get louder with each verse, more frantic with each chorus. At least that's how it felt to saloon owner Tamsin Zilfia. She tried to drown out the pounding chords with whiskey, which worked, but it also made everyone sad and chatty. Talk soon turned to the topic of the missing miners. A group of 17 siblings had come in on the train from nearby Red Mesa. They had been working their claim out at Rattlesnake Mine, but hadn't been heard from in several weeks. Some folks thought, well, they must have struck it rich and were busy kissing their numerous gold ingots or whatever it is wealthy gold barons did. No one in the poor town of Nightvale was sure how the other half lived, but they were certain that if they had gold ingots, it would not make sense not to kiss them. But some feared something tragic had taken place in that mine. At some point that night, the player piano stopped abruptly, and a faint skittering sound could be heard outside. When Tamsin and her saloon patrons investigated, they were shocked to witness a gleaming army of human skulls running over the desert toward them on tiny thrashing legs. It was a family of 17 hermit crabs wearing the new shells they had discovered out in Rattlesnake Mine, some still hanging with ribbons of flesh. The settlers of the unincorporated township of Nightvale decided the collapsed mine shaft was as good a place as any to establish an official cemetery. There were already 17 skullless bodies buried there, which was a higher concentration than any of the other random collections of bodies buried around town at that time. And so, Rattlesnake Rest was born. The town blacksmith commemorated the event by constructing a wrought iron fence for the new cemetery, featuring a beautiful decorative inlay of a skull-wearing hermit crab harbinger on the front gate. Listeners, I've just been handed some breaking news. Smokehouse Brisket Sliders are back. Slow-smoked for 13 succulent hours, topped with aged Gouda, crispy onions, barbecue sauce, and mayo. At Arby's, for a limited time only. You never know when they're going to show up. You never know when they're going to disappear again. And when they do disappear, you don't know if they're ever coming back. But they're here now. And when they're here, everything just feels right. Isn't that good enough for you? Can't you just live in the moment? Don't ruin things by asking for a bigger commitment. Let your hair down and get wild with Smokehouse Brisket Sliders. Only at Arby's. And only when we say so. Got it? Back to our retrospective of Rattlesnake Rest. Opposite the old mine shaft is the grave of the town crier. It's a modest grave with its crumbling headstone and faded Latin inscription, Clamor viventem est, vivus est clamor, which is supposed to mean crying is living, living is crying, but I've been told by my niece Janice's friend Marcy, who attends Catholic school, that it actually translates to something more like cry creature is living outcry. Which doesn't make a lot of sense. The town crier was a tortured individual, employed by the city to walk aimlessly through the streets, ringing a bell and weeping openly. After his death, many residents said they could still hear his sobs floating upon the early morning air. And, in a large crypt at the back, shrouded by a grove of whispering elms, lies the Mahalia family. The Mahalia family owned a very important video store annex inside the Ralphs back in the 1990s. They also kept a melted VHS copy of the movie Powder, displayed on the front counter to warn people against keeping videotapes inside of hot cars, lest they incur a hefty fee. We have never forgotten that valuable lesson. Listeners, a breaking news update. The Arby's drive-thru is closed until further notice. The same teal Honda Civic keeps entering and re-entering the drive-thru, ordering and re-ordering the Smokehouse Brisket Slider. Although he's ordered over 700 sliders and counting, the driver expresses how hungry he is during each appearance, before frowning, glancing nervously at his watch, And there's no Arby's packaging visible in the car. The cashier theorized that the driver, identified as Jim Sailing of Desert Elm Drive, is stuck in a time loop and has not actually retained any of the sliders, despite each order being successfully charged to his credit card. After the employees expressed concern for Sailing's plight, everyone gathered together for a briefing on the situation. "Maybe the pity we feel for him is wrong," suggested shift manager Sigrid Borg, who was recently awarded Employee of the Month for her positive attitude and dove-like white wings, with which she gloriously soars through the golden afternoon skies. "Maybe getting to order his smokehouse brisket slider after such a long absence from the menu was just the happiest moment of his life," Borg said. "And now Jim gets to relive that moment over and over again, as if for the first time." The employees huddled up, chanted softly, and broke apart, sufficiently motivated to continue selling sliders to Sailing that he will presumably never get to eat. Arby's is advising that all other customers please come inside the restaurant to order at this time, and thanks for your understanding. And now I have here an exclusive excerpt from Best Fangs, the upcoming YA horror novel by Night Vale Funeral Home director Annette Jacoby. Chapter 1. On the outskirts of town, there was an old, dark house. Everyone said it was abandoned, but Claire Delmonico swore she saw things moving past the windows at night. Not just things, a girl. Maybe even a girl her age. Claire was new in town, and all she really wanted was to make a friend. A real friend. Someone she could have sleepovers with, and make brownies with, and dance to WAP with. Claire was the child of a funeral home director, and the only guests that were ever invited into their house were already dead. One day, brave with desperation, Claire marched up the crumbling steps to the old dark house and rang the bell. A girl answered, tall and pale, with long hair that hung across her face. "What up?" the girl asked softly, barely looking Claire in the eye. Claire explained that she had just moved in next door, and she was wondering if anyone lived here. "Ha ha ha," the tall girl said. "I guess you could say someone lives here." Claire laughed too, though she didn't understand the joke. She needed a friend, and a weird friend was better than no friend at all. Annette is still shopping to publishers, if anyone has any leads. Oh, and if it helps, Annette's creative writing instructor at the community college wrote pretty good on her last assignment. Once again, we wish you all the best, Annette. More breaking news. The Nightville City Council is under investigation for misconduct. Leaked surveillance footage from the Arby's has revealed the City Council soliciting a free smokehouse brisket slider. In the video, which has gone viral, the cashier is seen refusing the request from a single being with multiple arms and heads, which is clearly the Nightville City Council. I mean, there aren't many other entities who meet that very specific description, except for the McReynolds family over on East Bedford Road, but the McReynolds are vegans. The cashier's refusal prompted the council to tap their collective chests several times in a self-important manner. The cashier again declined to serve them, citing Arby's Constitution, Article 5, Section 1, which, as we all learned in 7th grade civics, grants Arby's employees the power to declare war, enter alliances with foreign powers, and disallow free sandwiches to government employees for any reason the cashier sees fit, barring a two-thirds vote by shareholders. The city council became belligerent, yelled the S-word, crushed a sauce packet beneath their fist, wept, hugged the confused cashier, rapidly blinked in and out of existence, and eventually fled the restaurant, dragging the rest of its many heads and arms behind. The video then shows a baby raccoon entering the restaurant through the open door, eating lettuce scraps underneath the table, and falling fast asleep. Which is unrelated, but super cute. If you haven't seen the video yet, you really should check it out, or you could just go on down to the Arby's. I mean, the raccoon is still there. I've named it Honey Mustard. And now more on Rattlesnake Rest. Since the cemetery has been declared full, we've all been freed from the bondage of certain death. Of course, there are a few people who aren't exactly happy about this. Let's look in on them now. Night Vale funeral director Annette Jacoby gazes out the window at the abandoned house across the street. Unlike the character in her book, she has never seen anything pass by the windows at night, except an occasional bat tapping at the glass, eating bugs. No publishers are interested in her work. She considers self-publishing, but the thought makes her feel like a failure. Validation is important. The kind of validation she used to receive when she did a nice job on a deceased loved one's makeup, or tracked down their favorite flowers for the service, or played a flawless rendition of Wind Beneath My Wings on the pipe organ. Annette misses funerals, and the feelings she used to get from them, that special connection to the community that once filled her life with purpose and meaning. Across town, Al Kincaid, the gravedigger, loses his third consecutive game of Scrabble to his daughter. He can't spell, he discovers, and doesn't know very many words. He spent most of his life digging, and he's never needed the written word for that. Sophia is a great speller. Al learns that she's been winning ribbons at spelling bees for years at her school, and he's proud of her, but he doesn't know how to say it. Instead, he just grunts and nods and gets dirt on the furniture. As much as Al enjoys spending time with his daughter, there's more tension between them now that he's home more. Sophia is used to having time to herself, and Al misses working with his hands. Just a moment ago, Al dug up the entire backyard of their house for no practical reason. This infuriated Sophia, and the two are barely speaking right now. Al knows things can't go on like this much longer. He calls his former colleague, funeral home director Annette Jacoby, and the two talk in hushed, secretive tones long into the night. Now, the weather.
Trust full, arms full, I've never seen you. Tell me, am I out of my mind? Face like an angel, and your hands like Helios. You another sun in my eyes.
Bye.
Mark your calendars, everyone. This weekend, Rattlesnake Rest Cemetery is having a grand reopening. Chock full of giveaways, discounts, raffles, and a book signing by local self-published author and funeral home director, Annette Jacoby. Freshly cleaned, like new plots and crypts, will be offered at bargain prices. Oh, and a cakewalk featuring the confectionery of local celebrity chef Earl Harlan. With pastries so fresh, they still have the salmon bones in them. This weekend only, come on down. Wait a minute, you might be saying to yourself, how do graves just become vacant all of a sudden? Aren't they supposed to be our final resting place on this earthly plane, like, final? Well, the gods work in mysterious ways with their gnashing teeth and glittering eyes and long silky manes, gnashing their teeth on their sweet apples and cute little heaps of oats. Their eyes glittering because they just love oats so much. Majestic creatures. Honestly, I might be thinking about horses here. Yeah, my religious studies coursework and 4-H club activities, yeah, sometimes they run together. Anyway, I asked Annette Jacoby how every single grave, tomb, and crypt in Rattlesnake Rest became empty overnight. I've been reading The Secret and just like manifesting things like crazy, she said. Self-help and magical thinking really work, you know? She then deliberately avoided eye contact with Al, the gravedigger, who was standing nearby, his face, hands, and coveralls completely caked in dirt. "Been helping my daughter learn to play Scrabble," Al blurted without prompting. "That's why I'm covered in so much dirt," he barked, still looking at the ground. "Okay, sounds reasonable," I said, which is the motto of all good investigative journalists. I then bought 6 raffle tickets. I'm really hoping to win that Starbucks travel urn. Fingers crossed. "Don't go out to the scrublands," Al added with a shout. "I wasn't planning to," I said. "Good," he said. "Just a bunch of lumps of recently upturned soil out there. Just stay home and ignore that place. That's my advice," he concluded. And I could see his pupils shaking. "Cool," I said. "So cool," Annette chimed in. "Yeah. Good interview." Well, listeners, we are free to die once again. Death is scary, painful, and permanent, but it is our right as Americans. I, for one, am glad it has been returned to us. The possibility of immortality was nice while it lasted, but it was kind of a lot of pressure, too. I mean, I didn't even realize it at the time, but now I really feel like I can breathe again. Oh, and if you go out to the scrublands, make sure you avoid the giant mass of hermit crabs. They've really taken over that part of the desert. Stay tuned for the skittering of 100 tiny legs, weighted down by gleaming, grinning shells, approaching rapidly in the dark. Oh, and a reminder from our sponsor that the Smokehouse Brisket Slider is back at Arby's, but it is no longer for sale. Not to the likes of you, anyway. Good night, Night Vale. Good night.
In the climate-ravaged year of 2072, the city of Pura stands as a miraculous green haven, a geo-engineered paradise that protects fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. Demetria Lopez heads up Pura's public relations, tirelessly promoting the city's idyllic image, but when she stumbles upon a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Pura's existence, she must decide who and what she is willing to protect. Binge all episodes of The Last City ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. Support for Welcome to Night Vale comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or you just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switch to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/nightvale. That's odoo.com/nightvale. Odoo, modern management made simple.
Welcome to Night Vale is a production of Night Vale Presents. This episode was written by Bree Williams, with Joseph Fink and Jeffrey Craner, and produced by Disparition. The voice of Night Vale is Cecil Baldwin. Original music by Disparition. All of it can be found at disparition.bandcamp.com. This episode's weather was Hands Like Helios by Crystal Eyes. Find out more at crystalofficial.com. Comments, questions, email us at info@welcometonightvale.com or follow us on Twitter at Night Vale Radio. Or love yourself for who you are. You deserve it. Check out Welcome to Night Vale for info about our Patreon, which is the only reason we still exist in this hell year. Thank you to everyone who is able to support. Today's proverb: don't bite the hand that feeds you. Go for the legs. It'll throw them off balance.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
From the creators of Welcome to Night Vale, Alice Isn't Dead, and Within the Wires comes a new Audible original. Unlicensed. In the outskirts of Los Angeles, where the cul-de-sacs and strip malls sprawl into the desert, two unlicensed private investigators scrape by on whatever small cases come their way. But when a teenage girl pleads for them to take the strangest case of their career, this unlikely pair, with no resources and no backup, will follow a trail of seemingly unconnected cases, which will lead them to a ransom, a murder, a mysterious wellness center, and a conspiracy that might go all the way to the governor.
It's important to catch small fires early. They don't stay small for long.
Unlicensed. Available now at audible.com/unlicensed.
From PRX.